What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to Clown Questions, the show where there are no dumb questions. I'm your host, Matt K. Maurer, and the question on my mind today is, who got sniped? I'll attempt to answer that question in addition to some other questions. No guests today, but we have a first-year interruption with Mr. Rick Pitino, as well as the Goosebump Moments of the Week, as always, and I'll do my Sweet 16 pick. So excited for today's show. I hope y'all are too. So who's down to clown?
That's a clown question, bro.
So who got sniped? There were a number of snipings this past week. And, you know, maybe it's not the best way to phrase it because I'm not actually talking about someone getting shot, like actually sniped. I'm talking about certain teams poaching coaches from other teams. A lot of people got sniped. So there's no really one answer to who got sniped. The answer is everyone. But the worst one, in my opinion, the one that probably is breaking fan bases' hearts the most is Indiana. Well, Indiana didn't get sniped. Excuse me, West Virginia. West Virginia got sniped. Indiana was the sniper. Of course, West Virginia and Indiana are the two teams that were on the outside looking in on the bubble as they got left out of March Madness. But I think maybe a day, maybe 2 or 3 days later, Indiana hired West Virginia's coach, Darren DeVries. After one season with the team, West Virginia went on to hire ex-North Texas coach Ross Hodge. West Virginia now has his fourth coach in 5 years. Absolutely, absolutely brutal for West Virginia fans. I don't know any West Virginia fans, but I would imagine they'd be absolutely devastated. I mean, it's just insult to injury. You got left out of the tournament for North Carolina, who had no business being there. And then the team that got left out with you decides to go and take your coach after only 1 year. And now you're on your fourth coach in 5 years. Not a good situation for West Virginia. Maybe I'm sleeping on Ross Hodge, but when you see that he coached at North Texas, a team that didn't make the tournament, although they probably would have had to win their conference tournament to make it. But yeah, I don't have a ton of confidence in him. And I'm sure Indiana has a bunch of confidence in Darren DeVries. So, and that's just one of the snipings. There are so many other ones. Virginia sniped the former UMBC coach. I don't even have his name written down here. I just wanted to mention that. I kind of want to go through all the coach news. That's hilarious for Virginia to hire the man who made history by being the first 16 seed to defeat a 1 seed. You're going to the team you beat? I don't understand. If I was a Virginia fan, I'd be beside myself. Tough week for the Virginias, both West and regular Virginia. I mean, he's probably a good coach if he got a 16 seed to beat, you know, a former national, or they won the championship a year later, but a 1 seed. So I guess good hiring for Virginia, but weird. I wouldn't want to see that man's face as a Virginia fan. Be like, I got to remember this horrible upset years after the fact because he's now coaching my team. It's crazy. Let's get into some more snipings. NC State sniped McNeese's coach. They hire Coach Will Wade. This hasn't been confirmed technically yet, but there are reports that superstar team manager Amir Khan, also known as Aura, will be following Will Wade to NC State. Such a weird thing to say. I mean, a lot of times a coach will leave and you'll hear, yeah, he's bringing a couple players with him. That's typical. But he's bringing his team manager with. I mean, he's the only student manager to ever be paid NIL. So maybe not the worst strategy. I guess he can help get some recruits there. I don't know. Amir Khan did comment on it. He said, I'm not sure, but, you know, I'm open to following Will Wade. I think he will. NC State, he'll just continue to get more and more pub. He'll be like the chubby sister Jean who happens to manage the team. I don't know. That's a terrible comparison, but yeah, weird week. Amir Khan is like the most notable name to come out of this tournament, to come out of the blue. We didn't have a ton of upsets. McNeese obviously was one of them. Drake was the other. But those are the only two major upsets, and both of those were ones people were picking. Very underwhelming start to March Madness, if we're being honest. It's been all rock chalk Jayhawk, well, except for the Jayhawks, who lost to the only remaining Cinderella team, number 10 seed Arkansas. That's how bored I am with March Madness, that the one Cinderella we're left with is a 10 seed in Arkansas, coached by a national championship winning coach, John Calipari. But I'm getting off topic here. I'm a little mad at the lack of madness. We had two goosebump moments of the week from March Madness this week. I was expecting like six or seven. We got two. One of them was from the first four. No disrespect to Alabama State or Amar Knox there. But let me just go rapid fire through this coach's Baylor coach, Bill Armstrong, has been hired by McNeese. So McNeese struck quickly to replace their guy, Will Wade. Sean Miller is leaving Xavier for Texas. That's kind of funny because Xavier and Texas played each other in a play-in game very recently. I think Xavier, they had quite a bit of a comeback in that game. Tough pick for me. I did have Xavier / Texas going to the Elite Eight. I didn't even wait for the game to be read. I'm like, whoever wins, I think they'll go far. If you can see from the very long X'd out bet slips taped to that whiteboard over there, you will see that I did not do too well in March Madness. I made a 15-leg parlay and a 13-leg parlay. 0 for 2 on those. Both of those parlays, I lost on game one, the 8-9 matchup. Louisville and Baylor, you know, those two. Although, I will say it's much better to lose a parlay on your first leg because you're like, that never had a chance anyways. It'd be much worse to lose it on the last leg where you were so close. But yeah, I don't know. Everyone told me it was a long shot, but I wanted to win $7,000. Sue me. The one bet I did win was 50 bones on Arkansas plus 4.5 against Kansas. That was a lock. So that got me my little bet slip money back. But yeah, I made a little bet graveyard. I'm not going to put the winners up there because I have so many. I wouldn't have enough room. Obviously joking. I'm a horrible gambler, but I'll continue building the bet graveyard. Hopefully it stays. Hopefully it doesn't get too crowded here. Holy crap. I still haven't gotten through all the coaches. Xavier, they're hiring Richard Pitino, obviously Rick Pitino's son. He was a coach at New Mexico, got a good win over Marquette in the tournament. Moving on, former Drake coach Ben McCollum has been hired by Iowa. Seeing all of these coaching moves is making me think back to last year when I was calling for Greg Gard's job. I wanted them to fire him. I thought he didn't have us prepared to take on James Madison when we lost that 12-5 upset. But seeing all these coaching moves makes me think, like, when people say, why would you fire Greg Gard? Because, like, who are you going to replace him with? Seems like there is a lot of options out there. Richard Pitino, Sean Miller, Will Wade, freaking Darian DeVries. I would have hired any of those guys as the Badger coach. I don't know if I want to say that we should fire Greg Gard, but I'm looking for someone to blame that BYU loss on, because it was a John Tanjay masterclass and we were one play away from history. I will never get over that BYU loss. Never in my life will I. Last thing is for who got sniped. Finally, I'm going to end the answer to this question. The Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics were sniped by Bill Chisholm, managing partner at Symphony Technology Group. He agreed to purchase the Boston Celtics from the Grousbeck family for a $6.1 billion valuation. Now the largest sale for a sports franchise in North America. I don't know who Bill Chisholm is. I don't know who the Grousbecks are. So I'm just going to say the news and leave it there. Move on to my next question and ask, what's the bad news? We unfortunately had, I've got three bullet points worth of bad news here. The most concerning one from a hometown perspective is from Damian Lillard of the Milwaukee Bucks. As I've stated previously, not a Bucks fan. I am a Lakers fan. But really tough situation here for the Bucks. Damian Lillard sustained a deep vein thrombosis I learned this term earlier in the year with Victor Wembanyama. Basically a blood clot in his right calf. He's on blood thinners, which has stabilized the blood clot, and he'll continue with regular testing, but he's out indefinitely. So prayers up for Damian Lillard. You know, hope he has a quick recovery, but more importantly, hope he has a full recovery. That's a serious injury, not only, you know, threatening to play basketball, but a life-threatening injury. So you want to make sure he's fully healthy. But yeah, Bucks are a little bit down in the dumps right now. Bobby Portis got suspended for some BS, and now Damian Lillard, we don't even know if he'll be back for the playoffs. Unfortunately, and my brother will disagree because he always tells me I don't know ball. And you know, I am an NBA casual, so I agree with him to an extent. But if Lillard's not back for the playoffs, I hate to say it, but the Bucks are done. I don't see them competing without Dame. Because they couldn't do it last year against the Pacers, despite, you know, the Pacers had a good playoff run there. What's some other bad news? We have Juju Watkins. Damn it. Juju Watkins has torn her ACL. Obviously, she's out for the rest of the season. Won't be ready for the WNBA season either. You know, she might need a full year to recover, so she might have to sit out her whole rookie year in the WNBA. My question here is she still the number one overall pick? Because before the injury, she was a shoe-in to be the number one pick. No one really even had a debate about it. You know, it's same thing with Cooper Flagg and Wembanyama. It's like, she's the girl. You know, she's the one who's going number one. I don't know if she will go number one anymore, but if she doesn't, whoever gets her is getting the steal of a lifetime. Now, you know, I've heard people say, in women's sports, the ACL recovery timeline might not be as hopeful as that in men's sports, but I hope that's just misinformation I was reading on X, because I really want Juju Watkins to make a full recovery here. I was really excited to watch her, you know, in the WNBA. Probably, you know, I turn on women's college basketball during the Final Four, you know, once the games get a little more interesting, but yeah, really hoping for Juju to make a full recovery, because I think when she enters the league, she could kind of create a almost like a Larry Bird, Magic Johnson type dynamic and kind of really boost the WNBA ratings by quite a bit. Last bit of bad news as I check some meaningless baseball updates. Sorry, they're not meaningless. This is the regular season. But last bit of bad news is George Foreman has passed away this past week. I don't know the cause, but he was getting up there in years. So yeah, obviously thoughts and prayers to his family. Very sad. I don't know much about George Foreman. I know he was a boxer. I know he was a legendary boxer. I do know he invented a grill, I guess. Like, you make hamburgers on the George Foreman grill. But to me, those are both pretty interesting facts. But to me, the most interesting fact about his life is that he named his kids, all of his sons, George, George 1, George 2. And then for his daughters, rather than giving them a female name, well, actually, he did give them a female name, but he named them Georgette or Georgetta. Georgetta the second, Georgetta the third. So that's still so interesting to me. I wonder if his kids go by that and they're just at home like, hey, three, where are you at? Like, you got to go by the numbers, because if you say George, the whole family's gonna walk over. So rest in peace to George Foreman. Sorry to make light of your death. Speaking of death, let's go to the New York Giants quarterback room with this question. Who's QB1 in New York? I have to ask this question after the news this past week. Two quarterbacks were signed to the New York Giants. The first signing was Jameis Winston. Love me some Jameis Winston. If you don't Google his past, but he's going to the Giants on a 2-year $8 million deal, $4 million a year, not bad. I was looking forward to it. I think he would have been cool to throw to Malik Nabers. I was seeing people say that, like, maybe the Giants should just draft Travis Hunter. So then, you know, Jameis Winston gets confused, throws it to Hunter, thinking he's the defense, and Travis Hunter will cook. But doesn't look like Jameis will be the starter because the Giants signed 10-time Pro Bowl quarterback Russell Wilson to a one-year deal worth up to $21 million, $10.5 million guaranteed. So looks like, I guess, $10.5 million worth of, what do you call them, incentives, you know, probably based on if he makes the playoffs, the Pro Bowl, etc., etc. Tommy DeVito, their third-string quarterback, he was also signed recently. So who's QB1? I think it's Russell Wilson, but honestly, and I hate to say this because when I say this, it probably assumes one of these guys gets hurt at some point, but I expect all three of those quarterbacks to start at least one game yesterday. I don't want to see Tommy DeVito play because he's not fun to watch at all. I really want to see Jameis play, and Russell Wilson, he's hilarious. The most hilarious quarterback room of all time, Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and Tommy DeVito. There's going to be drama, but I don't know. It just seems like a QB room built of absolute turmoil, but maybe that's their strategy. But Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, they're going to have to try. I was going to say maybe their strategy is to tank and try to get Archie Manning in next year's draft because they're not, you know, too big on Shedeur Sanders or whatever. But tanking's probably not the strategy that they can go with because Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, if they have another terrible year, both of those guys are getting fired, your GM and your head coach. So I don't think those are the guys who are going to be doing the tanking. So I guess they have some confidence in Russell Wilson. So seems like it's up to Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston to save Joe Shane's job and to prevent Archie Manning to the New York Giants. One more football question for y'all. Who is wide receiver one? The answer, Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs this week reached an agreement on a three-year, $69 million deal, including $26 million guaranteed with the New England Patriots. He will be the wide receiver one in New England in a, let's be honest, a somewhat depleted, somewhat underperforming wide receiver room. He'll be a stud. It'll be good for Drake May to get some reps. Do I think this team's making the playoffs? No, I hope not. I hope that dynasty doesn't reemerge for another 100 years. But I don't know. Drake May's pretty talented. So we'll see. Diggs, I like Diggs for fantasy football purposes. He'll get a lot of targets just because he'll be on an island, although he'll be getting double teamed because wide receiver two is what, Pop Douglas? No disrespect to Pop, but he's no Stephon Diggs. But yeah, wide receiver one is Stephon Diggs and maybe Mecole Hardman? Mecole Hardman, anyone? Yeah, I don't know how excited us Packers fans are, but the Packers have signed the former chief, Mecole Hardman. People are kind of clowning us online because they're like, oh, they got their wide receiver one. Obviously, Mecole is not that. But what was encouraging to me is when I saw the report, they said wide receiver slash return specialist, Mecole Hardman. So when I saw return specialist, I'm like, okay, I like it. You know, I don't think he's going to really bolster our wide receiver core much. But if he can be on punt returns instead of Jaden Reed, I'm all for it. I think Reed's got talent and potential to return punts. But I'd rather have him, you know, stay on offense. We don't need him getting hurt on a punt return. Have an experienced guy like Hardman go back and do some fair catches. Other Packers news, we officially submitted a proposal to ban the tush push. We're kind of haters for doing that, but I guess I hope we win because that play is hard as hell to defend. Speaking of the tush push, Brandon Graham is retiring, the two-time Super Bowl winning defensive tackle for the Philadelphia Eagles. Happy travels, Brandon. You're definitely in the, I don't know for sure, but you're in the Hall of Fame conversation. So it'll be interesting to see where that conversation ends up. Last question for y'all is about baseball. Guess what day it is? No, it's not hump day. It's opening day. That's why I'm wearing my Brew Crew shirt. I'm repping the Reese Hoskins jersey. Shout out Reese Hoskins. I was a little, I wouldn't say shocked, but I saw today the lineup. Oh, Reese is hitting cleanup. I'm looking over at the TV. Reese is actually at the plate. Funny how that works. But yeah, I just wanted to say happy opening day. But I should answer the question, who's winning the World Series? I'm not going to pick the Brewers. I'd love to. We're down 1-2 to the Yankees right now. But we need to figure it out in October for us to pick them. Y'all know, y'all already know who I'm picking, who's winning the World Series. I don't know why I haven't gone to Pottawatomie and taped a bet slip to that whiteboard yet, because I already know who's winning the World Series. It's the Dodgers. There's no way in hell any team other than the Los Angeles Dodgers are going to win this World Series. Shohei Ohtani had an all-time great season last year, and he didn't even pitch. This year, he's back from his Tommy John surgery recovery. Not that he missed games last year, but he didn't pitch all of last year. This year, he will pitch. This year, there's another Japanese pitching prospect the Dodgers added, Roki Sasaki. You know, he's young, unproven, but, you know, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, all of these guys. What's his name? Yamamoto. This Dodgers are so stacked. I would be shocked if anyone else won the World Series. I'm going to do a World Series pick at the end of one of these shows. But today I'm doing Sweet 16 picks. So I'll just tell y'all now, if you want to go to Pottawatomie, put your money on the Dodgers to win the World Series. I like Dodgers over Orioles in the World Series. And that's my baseball talk for the day. Let's get to First Your Interruption with Rick Pitino. Pitino and his St. John's Red Storm obviously suffered a tough loss to John Calipari's Arkansas team. The 2-10 upset, the one Cinderella remaining, was able to knock off St. John's. Rick Pitino was interviewed after the game, and people had to ask because the Big East Player of the Year, RJ Lewis, got benched. He didn't play the last, you know, 5 minutes of the game. He only played 30 minutes in the game, which is a lot. But when it's the player of the year, you expect him to play, you know, 40 minutes, you know, 35. But yeah, he didn't play the last couple of the last couple minutes because he wasn't hitting shots. He was 3-17 from the field. And of course, a reporter had to ask Pitino about this benching post game. So here's a post game interview with Rick Pitino. First, your interruption style. Take it away, Rick.
Rick, you had RJ on the bench, you know, for a pretty long stretch at the end. Was that just because he just wasn't making them, or was there something more to it?
Played 30 minutes. It's a long time.
So he was tired?
No, played 30 minutes, and I went with other people. You already know the answers, Roger. You're asking leading questions. You already know it. So don't ask leading questions. You already know why he didn't play.
Don't ask leading questions, says Rick Pitino. The reporter knew what he was doing. The reporter asked, why'd you bench him? But the reporter knew RJ Lewis was 3-17 from the field. People are giving Rick Pitino shit for this response because later in the interview, I think I didn't show that part, but he goes on to say, you know, I'm not going to trash one of my players. I'm not going to throw him under the bus. And people are like, yeah, we respect you not wanting to do that, but at the same time, you also did when you said don't ask leading questions. You know why we didn't sit him. He basically found a roundabout way to say we sat him because he couldn't sit a shot. You know, he couldn't hit a shot. Yeah, that's it. RJ Lewis, 3-17. Personally, I think he should have kept playing RJ Lewis. They end up losing that game by, I don't know, 5 or 6. But in my eyes, when you're a team like St. John's who can't hit anything, it's not like RJ Lewis was the only one bricking shots. It was the whole team. So I think Pitino should have gone with a more of a Dion Waiters mentality. You know, if I end a game, 0 for, I'd rather end a game 0 for 20 than 0 for 5, because if I went 0 for 5, that means I stopped shooting. That means I lost confidence. So that's kind of the mindset I think Pitino should have approached with RJ Lewis. But unfortunately, he didn't. Unfortunately, RJ didn't play. And unfortunately, St. John's is out of the tournament. Maybe that's the biggest upset of the tournament. Number 2, St. John's falling to number 10, Arkansas. What a Cinderella run from Mr. John Calipari. Underwhelming March Madness, I'll be honest. But we do have two moments in the top 10 this week. Only two. I thought there would be more, like I said. But let's get into it. The goosebump moments of the week. The top 10 goosebump moments of the week. Let's start off with some hockey. Why not? At number 10, we got Nazem Kadri ending the game in OT with his walk-off goal.
Rasmus Anderson with a minute 10 to go. Hands off for Kadri. His shot, and he scores! Nazem Kadri wins it for Calgary. 4-3 the final.
Number 9, Thomas Harley scores right away in overtime to win it for the Dallas Stars.
And the Stars with the puck in front. Score! Over!
Well, right from the draw at center ice, they're able to win it, but it's a ghastly mistake with the puck and terrific pursuit by Jason Roberts.
Number 8, Nikola Ehlers scores the walk-off goal in OT for Winnipeg.
Fires, and he scores!
The Great Dane calls game, and the Jets win it 3-2.
Number 7, Devin Booker hits a cold jumper for the win over Milwaukee.
Racing past Lopez, rising up, gets the look. Boom!
Number 6, Obi Toppin nails the game-winning corner three for the Pacers.
Gives it up, Toppin, corner three, and rattles in! Luck of the Irish.
Number 5, LeBron tips in Luka's miss at the buzzer for his third career buzzer beater against the Pacers. Holy wow.
2 for the win. Tipped up and in. Will it count? LeBron James at the buzzer. He says rack it up.
Number 4, Amar Knox catches the Hail Mary pass and scores the winner for Alabama State.
Simpson home run play, the deflection.
Oh!
The layup!
Thinking that somebody was going to get a hand on it, but watch this, Spiro. Everybody gets a hand on it, and they get a friendly.
Number 3, Cade Cunningham banks in the 3 for the win over the Heat for the Pistons.
Cunningham gets the ball against Bam. Pulls up for the win. Got it! Detroit basketball with the lead with 0.6 to go. And they storm into Dade County and get the buzzer beating.
Number 2, Derek Queen calls bank on this buzzer beater to keep Maryland dancing into the Sweet 16.
To the freshman Queen, who's driving, floats it.
Oh!
Maryland on the right side of a buzzer beater with life into the Sweet 16.
Number 1 moment of the week, they're calling it the biggest upset in NCAA history. Wyatt Hendrickson defeats the previously undefeated Gable Stevenson. Wrestling.
This could be it. Oh my goodness. The biggest upset in the history of the NCAA. Could this be it? Yes. He has done it. Wyatt Hendrickson just beat Gable Stevenson.
I'll be completely transparent. I did not expect to include NCAA wrestling in this week's top 10, but I did. And shout out to my bro, Jonna, for including that biggest upset of all time. Also, I loved the first 4 moment. The best game of March Madness arguably was the first game of the first 4, 16 seed St. Francis versus 16 seed Alabama State. They threw a Jaden Daniels Hail Mary, and there was Tyreek Stevenson somewhere guarding the inbound, wasn't able to do it. They caught it, a Hail Mary, a touchdown for Alabama State, and we love Derek Queen's buzzer beater despite the travel. Let's move past that. Let's end the show here with my Sweet 16 picks. I'll go real rapid fire. I like Auburn over Michigan. I'm going to keep picking against Michigan because I'm pissed that they beat the Badgers. They took our mojo in the Big Ten championship game. Michigan State is going to be my next pick. I like them against Ole Miss. Sean Padula is a bad man, but Tom Izzo is even worse. Give me Florida over Maryland. The Crab Five. Crab Five is, you know, they're not to be effed with. Almost had to use the F-bomb jar there. They're not to be messed with, but Florida can beat it. Florida is so good, they might beat the Washington Wizards. So give me Florida. I'm going to keep advancing them. Like I said, my bracket's busted. If you see those two tickets, those were all bracket picks that I went with. So don't use this as gambling advice, but keeping with the picks, give me Texas Tech over Arkansas. It's been a chalk year. I expect the plucky 10 seed John Calipari underdog run to end here when he runs into JT Toppin and the Texas Tech Shooters. What do we got? Three more picks. Give me Duke. Am I missing one here? Yeah, I'm missing the BYU Bama pick. Okay, yeah, give me Duke to beat whoever they're playing. They're playing Arizona. Caleb Love, they asked Caleb Love post-game after Arizona beat Oregon to go on to face Duke. They're like, hey, you've played Duke a bunch. You used to be on North Carolina. How do you beat him? And he stood there frozen for a second. Caleb Love was like, and then he smiled. And, you know, people are saying, you know, he kind of held back. You know, he wanted to talk some trash there. But I think he was genuinely scared and didn't know what to say. Next game would be BYU, Alabama. And I should say, a lot of y'all are probably watching these picks after. This might be posted after some Sweet 16 games happen. So feel free to make fun of whatever picks I got wrong by the time you've listened to it. But in the BYU, Alabama game, give me BYU. They don't miss. They make every single three. And I am still depressed about the Badgers' loss to BYU. John Tanjay, oh, John Tanjay, masterclass of a game, 37 points, the highest scoring March Madness game by anyone. John Tanjay left it all on the court, and Greg Gard called a timeout with 13 seconds left to go. He should have just let Tanjay do his thing, but no. Greg Gard decides to call a timeout and draw up the worst play of all time. He's like, yeah, Tanjay, drive in the lane when there's three big centers down there and throw up a prayer. It was 91-89. We throw up a shot to try and tie the game. We're coming back from like a 15-point deficit. We're in the midst of a miracle comeback. And your best plan is let's try to send it to overtime? Are you kidding me? Go for the win there. Any other play would have been better. I would have rather John Tanjay stand there for 12 seconds, dribble the ball, and throw up a prayer of a three-pointer. And I'm not putting anything on John Tanjay. He's the only reason we were in that game. He's the reason we were such a good team this year. We had a lot of great other players, but man, I am never going to get over that game. We were just Greg, just have us throw up a three. Don't play for overtime when you're lucky to even be in the game to begin with. Just go for the win there. And that's my BYU rant, but that's probably also the reason I'm picking BYU to beat Alabama. Give me Houston over Purdue. Houston's still my champion. Still got a future on them at Potawatomi. Potawatomi, sponsor me. Come on. I don't know if they even can sponsor this. Maybe they could. But yeah, I'm going to go with my champion Houston. And for my last pick in the bottom right corner of the bracket, I'm going to go with Kentucky. I know Kentucky, they have beaten Tennessee twice already this season. And, you know, while I know it, they do say it is tough to beat a team three times, but I don't really give a fuck. And, you know, I'll put a dollar in the F-bomb jar just for saying that. But yeah, I don't care. I'm still taking Kentucky. I don't really like them, but I'm riding with Big Blue Nation.